Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
All right, welcome to another edition of Zero Block 30. And before we actually get started with the show, we want to make it a little bit of an announcement because we know that some of you folks are out there. You're stuck alone. You've been by yourself for a while. You're stuck in a small barracks room. Like some of the guys that we've talked to, the guys and the ladies that we've talked to at the Air Force Academy who are currently in quarantine, and they're essentially in what is solitary confinement by themselves, away from their family. They don't have anyone. Now, this show, we constantly talk about mental health issues, mental health struggles, and things like that. Now, in the veteran and military world, for some reason, there's become this predominant idea that you can't have mental health struggles unless they stem from combat. That's just not true. People in all areas of life, all types of life, struggle with mental things, with mental stressors, whether that be anxiety, depression, and sometimes it's a combination of all of those. And if you're in a position like you're at the Air Force Academy or you're at West Point or you're in college in general or you're in the military, you have this stigma that I'm not going to be able to do my job if I seek help. That's the reason why we are such big proponents of organization like Headstrong. They have plenty of other options for you. It doesn't just have to come from BAS, your basic military health system, or TRICARE or anything like that. You can reach out to these folks. You can have phone conversations, do telehealth, all kinds of things. We want to give you that information. It's going to be hard for you to listen to on the podcast. So what we're going to do is put in a couple links into our bio on iTunes, on Spotify. When you see the information about the episode, it's going to be listed there. Click on those links, get some advice, get some help. There ain't no shame in this mental health game. Now it's time to start Zero Block 30. And today we will have 6 rounds in the magazine. Round number 1. Over the weekend, President Trump issued an order that if I would have got it a couple years ago, it would have made me feel sick to my stomach. He's going to bring back people who are on IRR. We're going to explain what that's about in round number 1. Round number 2, in our first career day interview, so I'm having people on the show. We're going to have folks on the show to explain what their jobs are, what they do, not snipers, not SEALs, not anything like that, the typical type of guest that we have on the show. It's going to be everybody else because that's like 99% of the military. We want to include your job too. Round number 3, a colonel had a meltdown over ice cream, so you won't be finding much of it around Afghanistan's chow halls anymore. It looks like the troops are in for a, wait for it, rocky road regarding their dessert selection. Round number 4, Lieutenant General Mark Hertling joins the show to talk about his career, shooting with a chicken wing in a viral clip on CNN, how he was injured during a tank battle in Desert Storm, and much, much more. Round number 5, Sacre Bleu. The last people on Earth to know about coronavirus are some French submariners who are deep in the sea and have zero idea what's happening up here on dry land. And finally, round number 6, Kate has another game for us, and this time it's all about acronyms. Let's get going. It's a Monday morning. It is the only days I really know are Mondays and Thursdays because we record ZBT. Other than that, it really doesn't matter to me what day it is at this point. Working all the time, grinding, doing stuff, and you guys this weekend went a little weirder than normal. And for Cons is allowed to get a little weirder because he has a lot of room to go there. Kate getting weirder is scary for a lot of people. Cons, we'll start with you. I have to give you credit because you did a challenge this weekend. You rose to the challenge. You took it, and right away you did it. I was so proud of you. It was probably the most I've ever gassed you up in our relationship.
Easily. for as much as you were the cause of me doing that and running in circles in my apartment for an hour, you were very much my biggest cheerleader. So I thank you for that.
And you're welcome.
I have Describe what you did. What did you do?
All right, so, you know, Chaps wrote that blog last week about the dude running in circles in his backyard, and he ran a marathon. So on our text chain, Chaps starts by saying, Conj, you should run a 5K. No, wait. You should run for an hour and see how far you can go. And in my head, I'm thinking, I'm not going to do this. And then we just started like talking about it a little more, and I started asking questions. And I was like, you know what? What else do I have to do? Might as well. So I just started – I live put on the live stream, and I just started running in circles. And at first, I just had my cousin Vinny playing on the TV, and I thought, all right, I'll just watch that. And after the first like 5-6 minutes, when the time went very quickly, I was like, all right, this might not be as bad. And then as I started to keep running in circles and switching directions back and forth, I called my dad at one point. And then where things really started to take a turn was about halfway through, when I decided to put music on and I put some running cadences on, started singing cadence. And then I just started playing like regular music.
And that's how you know I was gassing you up. When I voluntarily say play Bruce, that's when you know I'm gassing Cons up.
I couldn't believe it. The Bruce recommendation or request from Chaps really threw me. But then I put on, naturally, I put on Born to Run to start.
Ah.
And it just threw me into this awesome, awesome mood. And at that point, I was beyond the halfway point. And my legs were feeling great. And I couldn't believe how far I had gone. So I think all of these things combined to really keep my mood very, very high. And it ended up being a lot of fun.
Well, how far did you run in an hour in your apartment?
7.45 miles.
Holy shitballs.
And that's what it says. Oh, I would think if we look at it, if you look at the tape, there's no way that it's that fast. Because
whatever,
if you run,
dude, that's what the app says.
It does say it, so I'm not going to take away from you. But normally, if I wasn't trying to gas you up, I would call bullshit on that immediately. I would never do that in this scenario. You ran 7 miles plus in under an hour, or right at an hour in your apartment. It was a great thing to watch. I had a good time watching. I was playing Sonic on one TV in my office, and on the other one, I was gassing Cons up. It was a great time. McCartney kept going, why is he doing this? Why doesn't he go outside and run? You're allowed to go outside. Like, just go outside and run. I said, well, he's doing it so he could be on stream. Like, he doesn't have a cell phone?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, and I don't think it would have been nearly as exciting if I had been outside. Not nearly.
And Kate, tell us about your 5-hour streaming session.
Well, I didn't even have any idea that Cons was doing that until later in the night when he texted me, great job.
I knew
you
did. I was like, Kate's oblivious to everything that's going on right now.
I decided for a while now, I've wanted to learn a TikTok dance.
Mm-hmm.
And people go super viral with them, whatever. And I was like, hey, I haven't moved my, you know, on your phone, you pull up the walk counter.
Yes.
Yeah.
For like, and I tallied it. I've now been in my apartment alone for over 20 days. Okay.
Wow.
So it's one room. I've been in it for 20 days. So I was like, man, I need to do something to like get my heart moving. Mm-hmm. And learning a TikTok dance would be the perfect thing, because the only other time in my life I have learned a dance was in 8th grade on a field trip when they made us learn this square dance thing for some ungodly reason. And I sucked at it. So I've always been an athlete, but I have never, ever had rhythm. And the only time I can dance is when I'm hammered at a wedding. So, or down the Jersey Shore too. But
is that you think you can dance, or you feel comfortable dancing?
I think I can dance. And it's both. It's a mix of both.
Big difference there.
Yeah.
So I started out, I put my yoga mat on the floor across from my TV, and I pulled up a tutorial. I decided to do this song, The Renegade. And let's see if we could play that for a second here so you get the vibe. That's the song, and it's 20 seconds long. 20-second little clip is all I had to learn, and I thought, oh, this will take up an hour of my time. It ended up taking me 5 hours and 29 minutes. And so, I just put my phone in front of the TV and live-streamed the entire thing, but I didn't read the comments for the most part. I just did my thing for 5.5 hours, and it turns out the entire time I was getting roasted.
You were. It was bad. I felt bad for you.
Somebody said I have a Michael Phelps body. A lot of people said I look like Sweet D from It's Always Sunny. People were like, how old is she? Why is she doing this? Oh my God. I went to the store, came back, took a nap. She's still going. Yeah, people were roasting the shit out of me.
So admittedly, I did not watch all 5 hours of this stream. I checked in on you, saw how you were doing. What was it about it that took so long?
So, you know how some people, like mechanics, can look at something on paper or in the class, mm-hmm. whatever, and then they can physically do it? They see it, their brain understands it, and then they mm-hmm. do it. I looked at this thing, the huge thing on my TV right in front of me, and the dance was mirrored. Mm-hmm. So literally all I had to do was move, and it was just move by move. Hey, move your arm from left to right. For some reason, I could not do it. I just couldn't fucking do it. At certain points, I was like, I think there's legit something wrong with me. Like, I don't know.
It's just some people just don't have that kind of rhythm, I guess. Like, I see people doing certain dance moves, and I just know, like, no matter what, no matter how much I practice, I can't make my body move that way.
Yeah, I was shocked. But anyways, it took me 5.5 hours. But I have to tell you, and I didn't sit down except for, like, a couple times for, like, 2 seconds. Just that. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, it took up a great chunk of my Saturday afternoon. It was raining here, and it was the first real, I was sweating. I was like sweating my dick off. And so I feel like it was the first, if you were bored and you were stuck by yourself like me, honest to God, do something
just
stupid.
Dance.
Like
just
learn,
put down your pocketbook and dance.
Just dance. It'll be okay. Do and just dance. Spin that. Anyway.
Or just run in circles. I was sweating bullets by the end of my little excursion there.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever crushed a beer faster than I did at the end of that stream.
Oh, I bet. I was going to have you do the one beer, 1 mile challenge too. I think that would be good in your apartment, but I think that your girlfriend might actually kill you if that took place.
The whole time I was doing it, she's chirping me and texting me, this is the stupidest thing you've ever done. This is lame. What are you doing? Are you going to be done? No way can you do this for 35 more minutes. She was chirping me the entire time.
Yeah, she didn't seem like she was having a good time with it at all. McCartney is addicted to Rock versus Pole. They've been wanting to play that all weekend long, like asking me every 10 minutes to go outside and play Rock versus Pole. Should not have introduced them to that game. Also, I found my wife is pissed. She'll walk into the living room. I am in such a bizarre place with the things that I'm consuming on my phone or on my TV, but I'm loving it, man. Like, loving it. I watched for about 90 minutes, an hour and a half, I watched multiple documentaries about this thing called Mad Honey. Have you ever heard of Mad Honey?
What is that?
So Mad Honey, you go
to... Is that
to...
when your girl's mad at you?
No, that's what a lot of people would think. But you go to the mountains of Nepal. And in Nepal, they have these honeybees. And they're Nepalese honeybees. And they're huge. They're almost like the size of walnuts. But you get there, and they are making, on the side of these huge mountains, they make big, huge honey hives, and there's only certain people that can go up there and harvest it. And the special thing about this mad honey is that it's supposed to be a psychedelic, so it has like the same properties of like magic mushrooms or something like that. But they go up there, they bring these people, whether it be from Vice or whatever documentary series is going to go, and they have on full-out bee suits. The Nepalese folks that are doing this and that they're going up with ropes that are made out of string bamboo don't have any safety harnesses on. They just climb up there, no gear. Their skin is like leather. They'll have bees all over them, like stinging their hands. They don't fucking flinch, man, because there's certain like micro evolution that happens in these people's bodies from villages here that their skin is so tough. The bee stings don't affect them at all. The Americans in the bee suits are like, ah, the cameraman. You could hear it, like see them like jerking while they're getting stung. The Nepalese dudes don't give a fuck. They'll stick their hand deep inside this cave, pull out a honeycomb that's like 15 pounds, and then just rappel fast as fuck down this bamboo ladder and get to the bottom. And then they're just like, yeah, try this. And then these dudes are tripping out because it's a psychedelic honey. It is awesome. And then I watched a video about a 76-year-old woman from Siberia who gave up her life and went against the patriarchy. She became a goat herder in Siberia. She's 76 years old and goes around and is just a nomad all over the place. It was in Siberian, like it was in Serbian or whatever the fuck the language is. I was reading the subtitles, and she just roasts everybody in the village, like calls everybody soft. She calls all the men pussies, that they can't do it anymore, that there's no such thing as good goat farmers anymore because her generation is dying off. I am just deep in learning about the world right now.
Yeah, how do you even get to these places? A lot of rabbit holes. I bet internet searches right now are crazy town McGillicuddy's because – That's a thing people say.
Oh, Crazy Town McGillicuddy.
You know what they say, Crazy
Big
Town McGillicuddy.
Time, Crazy Town McGillicuddy.
Yeah. I actually had a pretty stupid thought yesterday. So in my courtyard of my building, there's a little like play area for the kids that live here. And on one of the ladders going up, it has ABC. And I tweeted out, like, do you think the other letters get mad that ABC are always the ones mentioned? They're, like, the most prestigious of all the letters.
I remember, like, seeing that tweet because I thought, well, that's cute, Cons.
That is cute, Cons. Like, thanks for sharing that. I really thought, too, like, over the past couple of weeks, that this being stuck at home, if you don't have, like, good quality things in your house – that makes it a little bit worse. That's why we're glad to have a presenting partner today that is Death Wish Coffee. Death Wish Coffee is unbelievable. If you like to have your brain bouncing around and doing weird shit and like thinking different ways, when you first try Death Wish Coffee, that is exactly what's going to happen. When baseball season isn't happening, when the gym is closed, you need to have something nice to look forward to when you wake up. That's Death Wish Coffee. It is the dark roast blend that is double the amount of caffeine your average cup has. So be careful whenever you take it. You are going to be able to feel the difference. There's no doubt about it. With a smooth, bold taste, Death Wish Coffee will wake you up and help you get ready for the day. It's available in whole bean, ground, or death cups for like the Keurig and things like that, and cold brew. Crack a can of cold brew with a smooth, strong taste that packs 300 milligrams of caffeine per can. Subscribe and you can save 10% on that coffee when it's shipped right to your door. You gotta do this, folks. And if you want to help us out, go to deathwishcoffee.com/zero. We want to help you up your coffee game because right now it's pretty weak.
I gotta tell you. I'm going to interrupt you. You might have a death wish for me. My morning cup of coffee now has become one of my biggest luxuries.
I wake up, dude.
And I'm like, I'm going to take a little me time, even because everything's topsy-turvy, and there's nothing like a good, solid, like legit good cup of coffee in the morning. Just sitting there, getting ready for the day, kind of chilling out. It's a delight.
Either of you follow Brian Koppelman on Twitter or Instagram? He's the creator of Billions. He wrote Rounders. Do you know who he is?
No.
Yeah, I know who he is.
He has this whole thing that he started. Now he retweets and posts everyone on Instagram every day. The first cup of coffee he calls the Royale, and everyone shares their picture of them having their Royale because it's
so good.
As you said, it's a very big deal for a lot of people.
Get yourself a Death Wish Royale.
There you go. And not only that, but if you go to deathwishcoffee.com/zero, because I'm going to continue on with the ad read because it's what pays the bill, you get enter to win a MacBook Pro, Death Wish Cold Brew, Barstool Sports merchandise, and a year's worth of Death Wish Coffee. That's deathwishcoffee.com/zero. It is really good. It's really good coffee. Like, and I, even before the ad read, it was one that I would order pretty consistently from Amazon, like, and get it there. But now with this deal, 10% off and all the free shipping and shit like that and the chance to win, no reason not to do that. And help us out here on Zero Blog 30. All right, let's get into the actual stories of the day. We're going to start with round number one. It comes to us from Dan Lamothe, our friend over at the Washington Post, who's been on the show for a while. He's a good friend of ours. President Trump had some news that would have made my tummy turn a couple years ago and lots of other people's as well. Kate, what's going on with the IRR?
The Pentagon is now permitted to bring some veterans and reserve members of the military back to active duty. The purpose is to augment forces already involved in the response to the coronavirus pandemic. And the president said that the decision will allow us to mobilize medical disaster and emergency response personnel to help our battle against the virus by acting thousands of experienced service members, including retirees. So it's not just IRR. It could be beyond that as well. So the president did not clarify whether anyone will be involuntarily recalled to duty, but said some veterans offered to support this nation in an extraordinary time of need. And it seems like you read this and you're like, oh God, could I get called back up? Is it a thing? I don't think that's going to be an issue because already 15,000 veterans have expressed interest in rejoining service to help our nation respond to this pandemic. Some are retired, others are former service members who fulfilled a contract with the military but did not earn a full retirement. There's a whole mixed bag. And a military official speaking on anonymity because of the sensitivity said that involuntary recalls are possible for some veterans in the IRR. But if you're not in the IRR, if you're a veteran beyond that, you don't worry. But if you're on the IRR, there might be a chance depending on what your job was.
And if you're doing something like that, if you're in the IRR and you get this letter and you're not doing much, because we know a lot of veterans that are that way too. Like you're so sick of the bullshit of being in the military and you're like, I'm going to get out. And then you kind of waffle around for a couple years trying to figure out what your place in the world is. We know a lot of folks who regret their decision on getting out. This is the perfect opportunity. I'm going to be a little crass here to get filleted or licked up if you decide to go back in. If you're a corpsman and you decide I want to go back in during coronavirus season, people are going to be like, holy shit, that is courageous and great job.
I don't know if, I mean, I think it might be a temporary thing. I don't think they would be on an enlistment then.
It could be 2 years. Like, that they could have 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, generally, the people who go back in will be persons in headquarter units and persons with high-demand medical capabilities whose call-up would not adversely affect their civilian communities. So, it, you know, if you get called up, it sounds like, but you are a key member of your own community, how about then? They'll go to the next
right. Like if you're being nurse or if you're doing whatever right. in the medical community there, they obviously wouldn't take you away because that defeats the entire purpose of the program.
Yeah,
but you would think if this pandemic lasts and it stretches out and you have big time effects on a lot of things, that could eventually touch a lot more MOSs than just medical related. It could touch the security forces or MPs and how you guard the gates and things like that. There could the tentacles of this thing could grow.
Well, it already has, because right now there's units across the country from all different MOSs, and they're helping at the coronavirus, at the test points. They're helping build hospitals and temporary. They were at the Javits Center. They're still there at the Javits Center in New York City, putting together a ton of hospital rooms.
Have you seen those pictures?
Yeah, it's incredible.
The pictures of what they've accomplished in just, I think it was 48 hours. They came in 48 hours and built 500 beds with, I think they have 1,000 more ventilators that were there. The things that they're able to do. So when people get nervous about the National Guard getting called up, or like last week whenever we talked about the Bradley tanks rolling through San Diego, when the military is deployed inside the United States, it's usually to help. Like when Fred Rogers says, look for the helpers, right now they're in camouflage, they're in ACUs, and they're in smock gear and mock gear. Like that's what they're doing.
But I just wanted to read this one and because I wanted people to know, because the headlines look like Trump saying he's bringing back active duty members. You're getting, and I just don't want the person sitting there with like chip
You don't
crumbs.
Want it to get Facebooked?
Yeah, I don't want people sitting there with like, a veteran who's like in my kind of bad shape with like chips down their chest, clicking through the internet and being like, oh, fuck.
Morning colors. Yeah. I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to clarify. Don't panic. You're not about to get called up. But
oh, I disagree. I think we should sound the panic alarm.
Okay. All right. Oh, my God. This was not prepared.
Staff sergeant, this recruit again. Yeah.
So there you
More weight. God.
Yeah, huge shout out. Everybody mobilized right now. Even the Coast Guard is dropping off. I saw dropping off more stuff to the ships, that the cruise ships. There are still people stuck on these cruise ships. And their main link to the mainland is the Coast Guard right now. Every single branch is mobilizing to help our country. And shout out to all you people, because it's not easy. It's tough stuff. So
it's
thank
not
you.
Easy at all. That brings me to a point, because this weekend I talked to 10, I believe it was 10 different service members about their job and what they do for this next segment that we're going to call ZBT Career Week, or weeks, or however long it's going to last. But the first one up is a fueler. Like, so he flies a plane that we've seen pictures of it. We've put it on Instagram, where if you're flying out over the ocean or you're flying out somewhere and they need to refill in the air, the other planes fly up to this plane, and this plane has a long straw, long kind of dick straw that they hook into the nozzle of the other plane. You're refueling while you're flying in the air. The fact that they can do that is unbelievable to me. So in round number two, we have our very first career day that's going to be coming up, and this is from a KC-135 pilot. Here he is. Next up on Zero Block 30's career day, which I guess is turning into career weeks, we have Ryan Dote. Ryan is a tanker pilot with KC-135R. Now, is there a 135 that's not an R?
So there is. So the KC-135 started out as the A model way back in the day. And now, as I can get into a little bit, we re-engined, we re-upped, and now we're the R model. And there's actually a T model as well, but mostly what the Air Force is running right now are called the R models.
All right. So basically, tell the people, they know your plane, but they probably don't know it by the nomenclature. What's the main purpose of your plane?
Yeah, absolutely, man. So the KC-135, we are an aerial refueling platform. That's what we do first and foremost. We have the, so that's what the K stands for in our name. The C stands for cargo. We don't do a lot of cargo lift operations. We can, and we have the capability to do so. But
wait, what does the K stand for?
It stands for aerial refueler. I don't know why it's a K.
How? Probably... You can't just say that. Come on, Ryan. You can't just say that's what the K stands for. It's refueling.
I believe, and I could be wrong, it's for kerosene, but I could be.
Yeah,
I
that's what be, I was. That was going to be I my could be first mistaken. Guess. Kerosene. And I hope that you get roasted by the refueling community.
I probably will.
All right. So if you've seen the video, I think we've shown them a lot too. What you guys do, you basically have this huge plane that is filled with gas. And then you have the long hose that comes out. And you'll have an A-10 or an F-18 or whatever that needs more fuel in the air come up. And you're basically like an in-the-air gas station, right?
That's exactly what we do. Yep.
And how is that process learning it? Because I imagine, I don't know if you're an Office fan, but one of the guys on The Office that works in the warehouse that says that he was a surgeon in Japan, he says steady hand. I would imagine to be the refueler, you have to be able to fly the plane really smoothly. I would think that's incredibly smart.
Yeah, important. So that it's funny. Yeah. So I'm still, I've only been doing this for about, I'm still pretty young in the community, about 8 or so months.
Okay.
But really where most of the credit for that comes to our boom operators who are enlisted, our enlisted air crew on the aircraft to actually use and manipulate the boom. Us as pilots up front, man, what we talk about is just having what we call a stable platform. So making sure that we maintain our airspeed, our altitude, and let the receiver aircraft know what we're doing. The boom operator, man, who sits, lies down the back of the aircraft and extends the boom. I mean, that's where they really make their money. That's the real difficult job. We just got to get them there.
Are they doing that by hand or like joysticks or what?
Yeah, so they have basically a set of controls in the back in the boom that they manipulate, and that's how they use it. So it's a pretty complex dance. So we basically have to make sure that where we need to be, our receiver aircraft is where they need to be, that they come up to us, that they're safe, and that we know what's going on, we know how it's working, and then the boom operator basically takes it from there, and he basically guides that aircraft in and lets us pilots up front know what we're doing and what we can do to basically better perform to allow that aircraft to rejoin with us.
So if you're an idiot like me, like your only really exposure to planes and like riding on planes is commercial aircraft, is one of your jobs as the pilot of one of these refueling planes to look for what I guess they would call clean air? Because I would imagine the more turbulent that the air is, it would make the refueling job more difficult. Or do you have to just kind of improvise and adapt and overcome where like the F-18 or A-10 need you?
Yes, so that's actually a great question. And to answer your question, it depends. So when we do our refueling, we are given what are called blocks of airspace. So basically a huge amount of, we call them flight levels. So it could be 2,000, it could be 5 to 10,000 feet. And we're free to move within any part of that block of airspace. That's what we've been cleared. Sometimes, and it's happened to me before, what will happen is we'll be in our block of airspace and it's too cloudy or it's too bumpy. And either our boom operator or us will call up our boom will let us know and we'll call air traffic control and we'll either request a different block of airspace or we'll request to go lower or higher and basically find that smooth air. But you're right. Sometimes turbulence and low visibility can be a factor and it gets dangerous. And that all comes down to our boom operator. If he doesn't feel comfortable or safe refueling, then he is our number one knock it off or terminate call if he doesn't feel comfortable, because it's he's sitting, 20, 30 feet away from another aircraft?
So. Yeah. So what happens in that case? Because I can't imagine. So typically, if you're flying an F-18 or an A-10 or any other type of plane that needs to be refueled in the middle of the air, when would they call you? At, like, they're half full? Or, I mean, because you would imagine if you can't do it, that other pilot still needs to get back to a safe area as well.
Yeah, so that's actually, that's a great question. That's something that's actually kind of misunderstood, I think, is most of our, and this is something that I believe that same thing when I got into the community, and that's something that we try to dispel. So most of what we do refueling is pre-planned. So we know we're going to meet that fighter. We know we're going to meet that heavy aircraft. We know we're going to meet that reconnaissance aircraft. It's all pre-planned and pre-coordinated ahead of time because of what we do is so complicated. You need to, and do we, yes, we do have that capability to do what we call like emergency refueling. So if someone's in desperate need, but typically for the most part, in us almost entirely training missions, it's always pre-planned.
So if they, but if you can't do it, what happens if that pilot can't get back? Like if the other pilot can't get back, they don't have enough fuel to go somewhere. You just got to make it work.
Yeah, and that depends, man. I mean, there's always so many tankers in the air at the same time, but we're typically going to make sure that that guy can get home. And we have players that give us
that
capability.
Your primary, secondary, tertiary options if something goes wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I haven't been involved with a lot, so I can't speak super highly of it, but there's some great stories. There's a great story out of Vietnam where a fighter aircraft was afraid that he was going to run out of fuel, and a KC-135 basically fed him fuel to get him home. And there's stories everywhere you look. And I think that's one of the cool things about being part of this community is that we are kind of how should I put this? A kind of a background player. Most guys don't think about it. It's not the sexy option. It's not the cool. It's not the fighters. It's not even a C-17 or C-130. But what we do is vitally important. And like you said, we do give a lot of air crew and a lot of guys who might not or in a bad situation, a chance to either get that gas and help the guys out on the ground or get that gas and get home safely. So that's an important part of what we do.
And does that, whenever you first go to pilot school, did you go to Annapolis? Were you a Naval Academy guy?
I was not. I was actually an ROTC dude.
Okay, so you go to ROTC and then you go on to officer candidate school and then you have your flight option. Whenever you get told that you're going to do the refueling and that's what you get classified as, is that something that it took you a little while to kind of fall in love with the job, fall in love with the plane?
So I went like a lot of other dudes to pilot training, wanted to be a fighter pilot. And that's, I think that's pretty similar. And I found out early that I probably wasn't quite where I wanted to be yet. And that's fine. So I was not selected to be a fighter pilot, which is okay. And so I went to, in the Air Force, what we call, we have two tracks. We have the fighter bomber track, which fly the T-38. And we have the heavy tanker airlift track, which fly the T-1, which is essentially just a little private jet. So I got to do that, and I got about halfway through that, and I talked the community, the KC-135 community, and the mobility community in general is fantastic. Talked with a lot of dudes, found out about it, looked at the locations, looked at places I could go, and really fell in love with the mission, decided that's what I want to do. So I put that number one, and I was fortunate enough to get it. And I've fallen in love with it more and more every day since I've done it. And and it sounds cliche, but I wouldn't trade the world for what I do. So,
and how many crew do you usually have? So it's you, I imagine, a co-pilot, and
correct.
Then you have the boom, and then you probably have people in the back that are doing supply shit or what?
So it depends. So typically our standard crew is just three guys. So a co-pilot, a pilot, or aircraft commander, as we call it, and a boom operator. Depends on where we're going, and if we're TDY, we can have crew chiefs, we can have extra. I've flown before with multiple pilots and multiple boom operators. It really depends. We can have augmented, so crews, so more people than we need on the jet. But typically, our standard loadout and what you're going to find most of the time is just three dudes.
Awesome. And one last question for a pilot. How the fuck do planes stay in the air?
It's magic, man. You ever seen that? The air flies over the wing,
yeah,
and we go
crazy.
Up.
I don't get it. I'll never be able to wrap my head around it, no matter how many times it's explained to me by pilots. I'll never understand it. Man, we really appreciate your service. Thanks for doing what you're doing, Ryan, and thanks for coming on ZBT.
Absolutely, dude. I seriously appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you.
I am super pumped about that series because everybody that I talked to, it was just so interesting to talk to people who were excited to talk about their jobs. I mean, I talked to a welder. I talked to the KC-135 pilot. I talked to two different types of surface warfare officers who do two completely different missions on different ships, some Naval Academy grads. We talked to some enlisted side, a corpsman who said that he was willing to go back if they needed him, even though he has a long beard and he's working in like a plumbing shop now. We talked to somebody who works in Quantico who is the DARPA weapons that we talked about last week, like the fish skin and all that stuff, like the crazy futuristic weapons, the guy that who actually tests that equipment to see if it's good enough for the Marine Corps to use, and then interviews the Lance Corporals who are actually going to be using that weapons. Like, we talk to all different kinds of people. It's going to take place over the next 10 or so episodes. You're going to hear the career day stuff, and I'm super pumped about it. It might be something that we continue to do for a long time, but we will not be doing 12 in a row again. Because
you did 12 in a row yesterday, friend.
My brain was fried when I walked out, because, I mean, interviewing people, you have to actively listen. And I think with that, I realize how much I don't actively listen to what other people are saying.
Yeah.
So whenever I have to ask follow-up questions, you have to be in there. Concentrating for 3 hours is not something that I'm good at all. What we are good at, though, on this show is crushing some desserts. Cons, you've been the cookie monster. Kate, you've been crushing ice creams. If you're in Afghanistan right now, you'd be pissed because there's a colonel that we're going to talk about in round number three who is not letting his folks eat ice cream. What's going on with that?
Well, first, just to get us all in the mood, what's your guys' favorite? What's your top three?
Cons, you go ahead.
Chocolate, just the standard chocolate.
Oh, God.
I just like chocolate. I don't need anything super fancy. It's vegan with the chocolate ice cream. No, anything's fine. This chocolate will do.
Okay. Chocolate fudge brownie.
All right, that's better.
All right. Okay.
And then I really like Ben and Jerry's, the one that they did for Jimmy Fallon for The Tonight Show. The Tonight Dough, I think it is.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Mine would be, I love chocolate chip cookie dough.
Good one.
I love pralines and cream.
Old man.
That sucks. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's an old man.
Choice.
Sorry, that's
it
old
is
man.
An old man, I have to admit. But honestly, my dessert tastes are very, one, poor. Like, so I would say poor. My favorite candy bar is Payday. I love a good Payday bar, which I think is the poorest person move that you can have, because it's the one that's always left over and on sale. So I think that's the reason why I like it. And then my other favorite one, I love a good birthday cake ice cream.
Oh.
I think birthday cake is so overrated.
Wow.
When Cold Stone started breaking that out and it was like all the rage, everyone was like, oh, this is the best thing ever. And it's just okay.
Okay. Well,
I have a top three that's way better than both of yours. Number one, mint chocolate chip, Breyers version.
Mint belongs only in toothpaste.
I don't know. You mix it up with a little bit of milk. You make your own little homemade milkshake with that sucker. Top notch. It's refreshing. You don't feel like you just gained 4 pounds. Next, chocolate peanut butter swirl ice cream. Every year as a kid down the Jersey Shore, I would get an extra large cone of this and then have to like waddle home because I almost had diarrhea every single time. So it's just that good. And then the third is middle of
Katie Sunday diarrhea. Love it.
Yeah. My mom would always be like, are you sure you want that one? I'm like, oh yeah.
I am. I know what it's going to do to me, mom, but I need it.
I need it. Yeah. Anyways. And then the middle of the ice cream cake. Middle of the ice cream cake.
What's that?
I know what she's talking about. Yeah.
Oh, the middle part of the ice cream cake.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is just hands down the fucking best.
With the little chocolate. What do we call those? The little chocolate part of that.
The crumblies. A little bit of crumblies.
My personal favorite of any type of ice cream would be, you know, like the Nutter Butter bar that has like the chocolate and the peanuts on the top. And then, but the little piece of bottom at the cone that has the big chunk of chocolate in there. It's like the cone and chocolate and just the touch of the melted ice cream on there. Magnifique.
One of these days when I'm rich, someday, I'm going to buy like 50 of those and just chop the tops off and just eat the bottoms of all the cones.
Or just have like, just do like, oh, what's that? Hellraiser? It's like Hellraiser ice cream where it's just a big ball of ice cream covered in cone tips.
That would be amazing. Hey, I got time right now.
Yeah, nothing but time. I mean, pretty expensive to have for one thing, but that's like that'll end up being like a $30 ice cream ball.
Well,
if you guys had to pick one brand, no free ads, but if you had to pick one brand of ice cream to stick with the rest of your life.
Oh, I never give a shit. I just, whatever has the most.
Well, for the sake of the discussion, what's a brand that you would have to pick?
I mean, for me, it would be Ben and Jerry's if I had to take one. Yeah. I mean, $5 in the groceries are in like the gas station. That's expensive. That's high quality shit.
Yeah.
I would do Ample Hills. It's a small, tiny chain in New York City, but oh my God, it's amazing.
Way to make it relatable for the rest of the people in the country, Kate.
Yeah.
it's Ben and Jerry's. It's Ben and Jerry's for me, too.
There you go.
All right, let's actually talk about why we're talking about ice cream. What's going on?
Yeah, nobody in Afghanistan is going to be making an ice cream ball anytime soon. Sorry, everybody.
But, no Hellraiser ice cream in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and so I saw this tweet by Terminal Lance, Max Uriarte, and he said, this colonel in Afghanistan not only thought long and hard about why the chow hall should stop serving ice cream, but literally sat down at a desk and wrote this shit out and sent it. And then you see he attached, somebody must have sent him this, the official paperwork, you know, where it has the seal on the top left.
Oh yeah, naval formatted. Yep,
naval formatted. And it is a long letter, and I mean, there's 20 million memorandum through, and this is about ice cream, memorandum through logistics civil augmentation program, log cap professional, deputy program director, four, deputy commanding general support, US-4A, subject, reduction of ice cream services at contingency location, it's blacked out, dining hall facility. The log cap contractor shall reduce ice cream service at the DFAC. Ice cream shall only be served on Sundays, federally recognized holidays, and birthdays of each armed service. Justification, the change affords tenants, those troops are tenants, I guess, to have ice cream, but on a limited basis to reduce excess and waste. Decreasing the dessert option to lower frequency is aligned towards the expeditionary nature of the blank and its inhabitants.
Who oh, shut up. Not
who the
having
fuck
ice
is
cream.
Writing this about ice cream?
Ice cream? Like, not having ice cream is going to increase our lethality? Come on.
Who? It's, it lowers the frequency aligned towards expeditionary nature? What? You're writing about ice cream, dude. Shut up.
You know what that is?
Ma'am.
That's like, this is like. Ma'am. It sounds like the military version of putting in the naval formatting letter and then just going to your iPhone and it's predicted text. But you just need like big time command words, and those command words that came up was going to be expeditionary, inhabitants, nature, frequency, aligned towards. And it's just like, oh yeah, this makes perfect sense.
Well, I also like, is it additionally, it just keeps going on. Regulating this dessert option will also reduce a particularly unhealthy food item due to its high sugar content. Limiting this option while offering additional desserts of other varieties will increase the command's ability to. So you're just adding more desserts in another way. What?
And
what
if that's doing? The problem, like I really could see if you're the commander of a base and you're looking around and everybody is getting fat because you're no longer doing operations in Afghanistan. Everything's kind of on an operational hold where you're just doing training and things like that, where you walk out and you look at everybody and you're just like, God. We look like a bucket of shit. Yeah. We need to go on diets and just say, you know what? Kank the ice cream. I could see that as a decision that would happen, and I would support that because a lot of times whenever you are deployed, if you're not doing anything, the fuck games are going to get ridiculous because you have to have people's minds occupied. I mean, look at Kate with 5.5 hours on TikTok learning a TikTok dance.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think it's going to be? And she has access to her phone and looking at different things, FaceTiming anybody. These troops over there that aren't doing anything, that they're in an operational pause, they have nothing to go on. I'm turning my opinion on this mid-podcast where what? I'm actually in support of this because you're going to give the troops a reason to be fired up at their commander. That's what they're going to be talking about. They're going to have something. This motherfucker is a dumbass. He knows he's going to take it and he's going to love it. Fuck those people and fuck their ice cream. Not fuck those people, just fuck the ice cream.
You know what? On the opposite end, you know what I would do?
What?
If you were the commander and you took my ice cream away, I would, if I was a sergeant or corporal, I would get all my troops and I'd say, this is the plan. We would gain, we would eat, we would become 50 pounds overweight. All of us. Every single one of us. And then we'd form up outside their office and say, look at us now. You have to take it away.
Do you see what you have done?
Right. And so then they'd feel like an idiot.
Let's get Khan's opinion. Khan's, what do you got?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys letting me talk. You know what, Kate?
Let me caveat.
It's not surprising to me. It's not surprising to me. It's not surprising to me that you want to become a fat body lazy person and don't like this memorandum. Because I support this memorandum. Because the last thing you need is people getting fat, people getting lazy, and thinking that, hey, I could just have ice cream all day, every day. No, ice cream, especially in this situation, should be a luxury, not to be consumed every day. So I support this, Colonel. And also, you're overlooking the last bullet of the point. He's like talking about the optimization or remove non-essential services and contribute to less frequent contractor distribution and cold storage requirements. It's a cost saver. So this guy or gal is being smart in that regard too. So I support this memorandum.
You know who neither of you are thinking of? Our grunts. Neither of you are thinking of our infantrymen who are out in the boonies at little outposts, and they come back on a Tuesday or Wednesday for some reason, and all they want is a little strawberry cone. Just a little straw. The machine gunner wants a little strawberry cone, and now he can't have it because of you.
Yeah, but
well, maybe he should have been nicer to the Pogues, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Pogues who probably ruined this for everybody.
And they're not coming back. They're not doing anything right now. They're not allowed to do anything.
All right. Well, I'll fight this to the death anyway. Yeah. This is a hill I'm willing to die
Kate's
on.
Pro ice cream. Me and Cons, fuck them. Fuck them troops. Like, what they say, Mike, who was that? Kobe that said, fuck them kids.
Yeah. No, I don't know about – I didn't have ice cream when I was deployed.
I don't think I did either, but there was, and the desserts were going to, that's what I don't understand. If you're going to get rid of the ice cream, get rid of the other desserts too. Like replacing it. What's the point? Like everything has high sugar.
They could be talking about like fresh fruit. Cause some people consider that a dessert. So they
no one considers fruit a dessert.
They do in the military.
No, yes. Absolutely not. Well, no way.
At any rate.
All right. You know, let's move on. We're going to. I wish we would have had that information about the colonel's decision so we could have asked the lieutenant general what he thinks, but I have a suspicion that he probably would be in support of it as well. The general that we're going to have on in round number four is Mark Hertling. He was a great sport to come on. I think it's only because he wasn't very busy because he is currently quarantined as well, which has been great for guests. We had Rocky Blyer, which if you missed that episode, make sure you go back and check that one out. Now we have Mark Hertling, who is a 3-star Army general who's out, CNN contributor, amongst other things, and constantly busy on Twitter, and he'll block your ass without hesitation if you come at him incorrectly, which is really what you could do. Because if you are a 3-star general, you're used to these troops talking to you with so much respect. So whenever you get out and they're out and on Twitter and they tell you to stick a big old pole up your ass, you're not used to that. You're used to people saying, hi, friend, like, good to see you, sir. Welcome, sir. How you doing, sir?
And all those derogatory comments are said behind closed doors.
Right. They're not going to be like, look at this chicken winging bitch here with the fucking M4. He does it automatic. Fuck you. All right. Here's Mark Hertling. Now on Zero Block 30, I am privileged to have a 3-star general. Now, you had asked me whenever I was a staff sergeant if I'd be sitting down to have a one-on-one conversation over Zoom or Skype or anything like that whenever I was still in. My answer would have been a resounding no, and I would have said not something that I wanted to do. But, General, I reached out to you last week and asked you to come on the show, and I'm so thankful that you took the opportunity to come join us.
Well, it's great to be with you, Chap. I know you guys are publicizing to a lot of service members, so, you know, I can give life after retirement and maybe some things that are going on in the world today the way I see it, and also reflect back on my time in the military. Happy to be with you. It's great to be with you when there's not a whole lot else to do, right?
Definitely. I've been reaching out to different people. Right now is the time for us to get interviews because people don't really have a whole lot going on. And we're going to get into a little bit of coronavirus in a little bit. But I want to start with your career because we have, based on our show and just I think just the age bracket that myself, Cons, and Kate are, we primarily focus on the war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria and all over the place. I always think it's interesting talking to someone like yourself, who, whenever the war on terror really kicked off, you were a senior colonel already. Yeah. Did you feel like in that moment, what went through your head whenever you knew that we were going to have a large-scale conflict?
Yeah, everything changed, Chaps. I tell you, I had just gotten into the Pentagon for my first tour ever there. I was a colonel, and in fact, I was out at the National Training Center in California, you know, across from 29 Palms, which you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they said, hey, you're just come out on the 1-star list, but you got to get a joint job before we can promote you. So we're sending you to a tour in the Pentagon. And they said they were going to send me to the Vice J7 on the joint staff, a sleepy little job in charge of war plans. And this was in August of 2001. Mm-hmm. Well, I got there, and a couple of weeks later, the plane hit the building, and, you know, it was Katie barred the door. It was everything turned. And, you know, it was interesting going back to two months.
So were you before, in the building whenever the plane hit?
I actually was not. I was up in New York at the time, out on Long Island. I was on leave. I hadn't reported in fully yet. So, you know, I'd come in and I had a Marine boss who said, hey, you know, you just got in here, take a couple weeks leave and then come back and we'll get you going. So that was the first part of September. So, you know, I had the office phone number. I called in. I had a Navy captain there who answered the phone and he said, hey, you know, I said, what's going on? You know, is this Al-Qaeda? Because we kind of assumed it was when they hit the World Trade Center. And he started talking to me and he said, wait a minute. He said, something just happened. And at that point, I was talking to him on the phone that the plane hit the building. Well, my wife and I drove all the way back from New York that night, got into the Pentagon about 5 the next morning, and you could still smell the smoke and the diesel fumes and all that. But what was interesting is, you know, the war footing inside the Pentagon even changed. And because I was waiting to get promoted, you know, I was kind of in a purgatory state. And they said, hey, you go work in the National Military Command Center. So I took a shift in the command center and was in there actually when the war in Afghanistan kicked off. And then we were watching the war plans later on when it shifted toward Iraq at the same time. And then 18 months later, I was in Iraq as an assistant division commander in Baghdad with the 1st Armored Division. So, you know, you talk about how the changes occurred between coming in from really a peacetime training army to full-blown warfare in the Pentagon and then going out and actually being a part of it all in a span of about 2 years. And it was everything changed. I mean, the last 10 years of my career were very different than the first 25 years of my career.
Did you feel like, because to me, it's always interesting to speak to somebody who was at a high level of command to think, did you think that you were ready for what you were going to do at that time?
From a tactical standpoint, again, having just come from the NTC, yeah, I did. You know, we had some pretty good training going on out there. But even at that time, I mean, I'll give you an example. One of the things that I was asked about, having just come from Irwin, was how are we prepared to do combat in the cities? And frankly, at the time, we weren't. You know, we were a large maneuver army, just like the Marine Corps. So there was a lot of emphasis during a short period of time of getting folks ready to do combat in the cities, especially big cities with big formations. So there were a lot of things from the standpoint of tactics, but also from the standpoint of logistics. And then, you know, watching what was going on with the war planning and the contingency planning, when the civilian leaders started cutting the force, you know, I was right in the midst of all that and watched that happen. And there were a lot of us in the Pentagon that were not in agreement with what was happening there when we were going into Iraq specifically, not so much Afghanistan. But yeah, it was a very different way to look at intelligence, you know, how you were applying forces on the battlefield, the methods of doing courses of actions. And we really shifted from a conventional type of force to a counterterrorism force in a very short period of time, counterinsurgency counterterrorism force in a short period of time. And it was tough. I mean, it shows the adaptability of folks in the military that they could do that relatively quickly. Although, you know, as what's been said recently by a lot of papers that have come out, we didn't always get it right. And there was a pretty steep learning curve for the first couple of iterations.
And whenever you have this, how do you, it's fascinating to me because my level of leadership as a Staff Sergeant Connors, as a captain, is very much what's in your face. You do what you're told to do there. You know what your task is. You know what your mission is. How do you go from a localized battalion commander level to multi-theaters? Like, what is that education process like for someone who is an 06 and then 07, 08?
Well, you know, during your career within the higher ranks, you do a lot of exercises and a lot of war games. And we did that, but never when the reality
of like Call of Duty or something like that.
Yeah, it doesn't really slap you in the face, though. You know, the real problems don't bubble up. And I'll never forget, chaps, you know, when I was taken 1st Armored Division, I had the chance to go with them for a second time into Iraq in 2007 and 8 as the commander. My 4-star boss came up to me and he said, hey, look. He said, two pieces of advice. First of all, as a division, don't fight the brigade's fight. let them fight it and make sure they're not fighting the battalion fight, because each level of authority has different responsibilities. And then the second thing he told me, which was really came back multiple times as a senior leader, was we can't kill our way out of this. You know, it's just not a matter of going in and killing everything we see. We really got to establish government and security and all that. So you take sort of your aperture opens up, so you see what's facing you, and it is very different at each level of command. I mean, the difference between what a second lieutenant is doing versus a battalion commander versus a two-star general versus a, you know, somebody like a Petraeus or an Odierno covering the entire theater, it's really tough. It's really tough.
I can't imagine. And then you have to put all of that into one little ball, and that's kind of where you gain leadership and why people bring you on CNN to seek your advice and seek your counsel, because you've seen a lot of different things. You don't get to the rank of a three-star general without seeing some things. Seeing the world as it's developing now, if you are still active in the Army and you have this coronavirus outbreak, what would be some of the biggest strategic problems that we would have as far as readiness goes?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I saw a piece this morning that where General Milley, the chairman, and Secretary Esper got on and did like a Facebook blog about what the Defense Department was doing. And what I'll say, first of all, is the things that our military is facing today is tougher across the board than it was 3 years ago. There's an organization called the Conference of Foreign Relations. They put out what the top 20 threats are in the year 2020. And when you look at what the threats are, they're very diverse. Everything from, you know, what might happen in Iran to, North Korea to Iraq destabilization to what's going on in Syria and the Kurd. I mean, they span the globe, South China Sea interaction with the Navy, shooting down airplanes, other places. And you say, man, we had some tough things when I was still in, when I retired in 2013, but nothing like the senior leaders are facing today. And then you throw on top of that this coronavirus, where it's not only going to affect the health and welfare of the troops and their families while they're trying to deal with some of these, you know, conflict challenges, but it's also going to further destabilization in other countries. I mean, when you think about this being a worldwide pandemic and what might happen in places like Syria if this disease takes hold and there's massive deaths and we have people fighting there, man, it's really going to get sporty, and it puts a whole different spin on the kind of things that commanders and leaders have to do on the battlefield.
How would they balance training if you were still the general in charge, say, of a division, and you know that you have to have social distancing and things like that, but you still have to maintain your mission readiness? What do you do?
Well, it's interesting you ask that question, because I still have a lot of contacts in the Army. And in fact, our son is still actively serving at Fort Bliss, and they're going through discussions right now, as he is a commander with the division, of how do we send everybody home right now? How long do we continue to have formations in the morning? When they're given a task like he was given, I won't go into it, but he's been given a task recently related to the coronavirus, and he's now having to look at mitigating measures to protect his soldiers and at the same time accomplish the mission and at the same time answer, you know, family members' concerns that their husbands and wives who are soldiers are going off every day and perhaps being contacted with others that have it. So you have to constantly weigh the self-quarantining with the mission requirements. And what I tell you, if this turns into a full-fledged epidemic, which it will, truthfully, it's going to put some challenges to the key leaders, the strategic leaders of the military, where they have to eventually just say, stand down. And it becomes a force protection issue. That's going to be a hard call. I don't know when that's going to happen.
And what local level leaders, like say you were the commanding general of Marine Corps Base Quantico or something right, like that, do you have the ability as the Marine Corps base leader or whatever base leader you are, a fort leader you are, to say our people aren't coming in? Or can somebody from over the top be like, oh, yes, they are?
Well, first of all, yes to both those questions. You know, what you would do is an analysis and say, okay, how much has it hit us? Is it of the extreme where we have to go to extreme measures like complete self-quarantine, where I have to call my commander in Marine Corps headquarters and the, you know, the commandant and say, hey, I need to shut this down and put everybody on quarantine. But if I do that and there's nobody on Quantico that's been affected, then I'd look pretty silly. Right. But at the same time, you know, that's a judgment call. Are the Marines on Quantico going out into the local area, and could they contract it very quickly? And 2 weeks from now, when the disease actually shows itself, are we suddenly going to have a mass requirement to quarantine? You can't wait too late on something like this. This isn't like a terrorist attack where you can shelter in place or everybody hide in their house right now. This is, there's a delay time in this thing that you have to consider.
And even at the smallest level of like fire team leader, you're told from the very beginning that it's mission accomplishment and then troop welfare.
Right.
When does that balance switch for something that's like a pandemic? Because if you do have people continue going to work, you're infecting a lot of the troops that are going on. Eventually, the troop welfare does affect the mission.
Yeah, it certainly does. Well, you know, I could relate that specifically to what I'm seeing now. When I retired in 2013, I was asked to come work for a hospital. I won't go into that story because it's too weird. But the same is true right now with doctors and nurses. I mean, they are having to have that judgment call. I was talking to an emergency room doc this morning who's married to another doctor who's a primary care physician, and they've got two small kids who are 3 and 2 that they're leaving with a nanny every day because they're going in for mission accomplishment, the same kind of thing that we did in the military. And they realize that they can't just say, hey, I'm taking off, because they have patients and they have requirements, but they're still concerned about their kids. So that's the kind of thing that I think will affect anybody. And going back to your question about the small team, the squad leader or the small team leader, what kind of decisions do they make? Well, you know, the mission does come first, but at the same time, you anticipate your leaders will take under advisement the welfare of the soldiers, which is something that comes into play every time you have that kind of decision making.
And we have a lot of our listeners are junior service members or junior officers and below. Want to get you on the record as a 3-star. If you were still in command right now, would you be making the folks get haircuts?
I'm sorry, would I do what?
Be making everybody get haircuts.
Making probably not, but this is where opportunity
strongly encouraging.
I mean, there's a thing, I mean, I remember back from my day that's still in existence, this thing called the Sergeant Morales Club in the Army, where old Sergeant Morales, the legend behind him, was that, you know, when troops didn't have enough money at the end of the month, he would cut their hair personally as a sergeant and in terms of caring for the troops. I mean, you
sure
can certainly take
too.
Up those kind of things. And every barber or every company supply room, if they're still with the same TONE that I used to have, they'll have a barber kit somewhere. So somebody can do that. But I wouldn't be draconian about it, but I wouldn't let it get carried away either, you know?
And by the way, are you in agreement with the Navy? Because the Navy and the Air Force are suspending their PT tests. You think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that is a good idea. It's the same thing as suspending, you know, sports. You know, why is Major League Baseball not playing? Why is the National Hockey League suspended? Well, because you got people in close conditions sweating and throwing, you know, bodily fluids around, not to get gross about it, but that's what they're doing. And yeah, I would suspend or postpone PT tests for sure.
36 years in the uniform, right? 36 years?
38.
38 years in the uniform. Looking back now, me, I only did just about 10. There is definitely things that I regret or wish I would have done differently. If you could hop back into the uniform with one regret that you could fix, what do you think that would be?
Oh, man. There's too many, truthfully. There's a lot of things I wish I could do over. I think the biggest part, the biggest thing that I reflect on, and I've never really stated this publicly, so you're putting me on the spot, but I've thought about it a lot. During Desert Storm, I was a squadron S3 for a cavalry squadron in the 1st Armored Division. And we had a commander who was, I don't know how I want to say this, but he was not sleeping well. And he was kind of losing it, truthfully. And he was making life unbearable for the entire squadron. And I wish I had been a little bit more professional in the way, you know, I supported him. I became one of the team that was kind of behind his back, making fun of him and doing that. And I was a major in the unit. I was the S3. And I shouldn't have done that. I should have been more supportive of him, even though in combat, he lost it. I mean, he literally had a nervous breakdown, but up to that point, He was doing some things that were really causing some conflict within the soldiers. And I wish I had handled that differently.
Have you gone through, and now that you're in leadership positions, had to adjust any type of your leadership style now that you're dealing primarily with civilians?
It is certainly interesting because what I'm doing now is one of the jobs that they asked me to take on this hospital is to train doctors on how to be better leaders. Because truthfully, physicians do not get any leadership training in med school. So sometimes they can come off as rather aloof or filled with an ego. So I'm trying to teach them how to understand the three elements of leadership, which is your behavior, your approach toward other people, and how you influence people. Well, when you're in a civilian environment, the private sector, the way you use influence techniques are very different than the way you use influence techniques in the military, which has a common purpose and a common culture. Sometimes you have to adjust the way you deal with other people. I hope I've adjusted that. Although, you know, it's hard to do when everybody knows you're a general. And it's interesting because a lot of doctors say, what are you going to teach us about leadership? All you had to do was order people around and they do whatever you want. And I'd say, obviously, you have never dealt with a bunch of 18-year-olds because they don't always do what you want them to do.
And you're experiencing a lot of that on Twitter right now, because we reached out whenever we said that you were going to be on the show. You have an interesting following on Twitter, because usually whenever you have somebody like yourself, the responses are glowing. But I noticed that there was a common theme in some of the questions. People are upset at some of the things that you said about weapons. Can you tell us about why?
Well, I could tell you the whole story behind it. It was something I did 2 years ago. I think it was during the Vegas shooting. I got a call one afternoon from CNN saying, hey, would you drive down to Tampa? We want to show the capability of an AR-15. I said, yeah, sure. So I showed up at this shooting range, this weapons dealer, and he had a shooting range in back. And we had like 30 minutes to tape this clip with a reporter. A great reporter, a guy by the name of Gary Tuckman, who had never fired a weapon before. But this guy has been all over the world. He's been in hurricanes and natural disasters and humanitarian crisis. Really good guy. Well, he had never fired a weapon. And after we went through it, he said, hey, can I shoot it? I said, yeah, sure. So I gave him the weapon. And he starts the clip. And truthfully, I didn't see the final product before it was aired. Mm-hmm. And there were some things, there was one thing specifically that I said, I made a mistake because we had been talking, there were two weapons on that we had. They wouldn't let us shoot an M4, which the gun dealer had, but he would let us shoot an AR-15 he had in the shop, but it didn't have a collapsible stock. It had an iron post and, you know, it was 100 meter range and all this. So as we were talking, like I'm talking now, I kind of said something. I said, we were talking about the difference between the weapon. I showed him the automatic switch from the semi-automatic on the M4, and I said, "See, the AR-15 only has the semi-automatic, but you can fire it almost as fast as automatic. You can go. I think I said something like it's almost like having an automatic if you can pull the trigger quickly." So that was the backstory. Then they filmed it, and I think I said full semi-automatic. It was a dumb thing for me to say. And when they took the hours worth of taping they did back to the studio to cut it up, I didn't see what they finally produced.
Which happens all the time in the content.
Yeah,
You just go out there and whatever the editors put together, they put together.
Right. And it was a 2-minute clip. So when it appeared, oh man, all the gun nuts started going crazy. Here's this general who doesn't know what he's talking about. He's got a chicken wing. You know, I'm also 67 years old, so I had my arm up when I was firing the weapon. But Gary Tuckman,
I had somebody, just not to interrupt you, sir, but I had somebody slide into my mentions or my DMs talking about that. And I was like, look, if it's anything like it is in the Marine Corps, I know for a fact in the Marine Corps, once you reach the rank of major and you've been in for 12 years, you no longer do yearly qualifying with the weapon. I was like, he was promoted. I was talking about you. I was like, he was promoted to colonel in 1997. I was like, so the odds that he's been on many firing ranges and worked on tactical skills and thing like that anytime relatively soon is not great, because most of the jobs that you're going to have 07 and above, you're not going to be spending a lot of time on the range. That goes to the troops.
Yeah, well, that, you know, truthfully, all that may be true, but it's also an excuse, and I'm not going to take that. I also wouldn't take the excuse that I'm a tanker. You know, I'm not an infantryman, you know? So most of my time is spent in tanks and Bradley. So it doesn't matter if you got a chicken wing or night. And plus, I'd been retired about 6 years when I did this. None of that is an excuse. But at the same time, Gary Tuchman and I both have gray hair. So I'm sure there was some confusion about who was who. It doesn't matter. All of that is crazy. The message was that this was a powerful weapon. It can shoot a lot of bullets in a short period of time. And the bullets are devastating. And what was interesting is when the clip came out and CNN publicized it on Twitter after they showed it on the air.
And he's talking about the actual clip on TV, not the magazine. Don't get upset at him again.
Exactly. Yeah, not the magazines and the weapon, the clip on TV. So when they published it on Twitter, I immediately said, hey, I misspoke. This was not full semi-automatic. It was a semi-automatic weapon. We did not have an automatic weapon. And I actually apologized under that. And I actually also called CNN and said, hey, this is a really lousy editing. You might want to not play this again. And I don't think they ever did. But that didn't stop all the gun crazies from doing it. And they're still doing it 2 years later. So if that's the only thing I've done wrong on CNN, I'm okay with that. I don't care. But
yeah,
I'm not going to take crap from people that remind me of it 2 years later every time. That's the only thing they remember about me, you know?
And you'll smash that block button on them, won't you?
Yeah. And truthfully, I have kind of a policy. If anybody insults people or curses at people or uses foul language or is just rude and doesn't show respect, I block them. It's no problem.
There you go. And I want to get into a little bit of the tanker side, too, because you said that you were a tanker. And in one of the biggest tank battles that happened in Desert Storm and Desert Shield, which was in the Battle of Medina. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, Battle of Medina Ridge. I was, like I said, I was a Cavalry Squadron S3. I wasn't in a tank. I was in a Bradley at the time because that's what scouts had.
See, on ZBT, we like to put a picture of a Bradley and say this is a tank because the tank people are worse than gun nuts.
Yeah, that's as bad as saying a clip versus a magazine, right?
Yeah.
So I was in a Bradley, and we actually, our cavalry squadron was out in front of the 1st Armored Division, about 20 kilometers out in front in an advance guard, and we actually found the Medina Division. So we fought them for about 2 hours with our helicopters and calling in age 64s and with our Cobras. And then the rest of the division came through about 5 o'clock the next morning, 5 a.m., 05. And we did a forward passage of lines and a tank brigade went into the assault and actually destroyed the Medina Division and part of the Tawakana Division.
And I haven't been able to find much. I know that that's where you received the Purple Heart.
Right.
What happened to you? I haven't seen that story.
Well, when we were actually engaging before the brigade came up, we were hit with 5 rounds of artillery. And I suffered injuries on that. So I took some shrapnel from an artillery piece. We had, in our CAV squadron, we had, I want to say it was 33 guys wounded. Only, I think, 2 of them had to be medically evacuated. The rest of the folks just continued to fight. So it was a pretty interesting night. That happened about 2 o'clock in the morning on 2 o'clock in the morning on February 27th, as I recall. So you remember the dates and the times of key times in your life. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. Mine's July 31st of 2007. Whenever I was thinking about what you went through and doing all of that as at that time in the military, I know for sure whenever I was in really around the 06 to 08, we really started to talk more about PTSD. Did you feel like when you were on the ground as a commander that you did enough for your men?
No, not at all. I mean, I didn't realize the serious repercussions of it. Big Army was attempting to do something. It was interesting because General Casey had been in Iraq as the commander for like 24 straight months. And he came out of Iraq and just totally burnt out and then became the chief of staff of the Army. Well, his focus during the years right after that was on resilience. And he started a big resilience program of which PTSD was a driver. Post-traumatic stress. I won't put the D on the end of it, disorder. Mm-hmm. But we were certainly seeing the effects of it because of multiple tours and folks going back and forth into both Iraq and Afghanistan and the repeated tours. But I still don't think we even saw the implications then because I think research, the medical community really started researching it starting in about 2004 and 2005, and they really didn't get the attention of commanders at the senior level until, like you said, 2008, 2009, where people really started paying attention to it. What's interesting, Chaps, there's a great book called Soldier's Heart by a woman named Elizabeth Sammet, and she talks about what post-traumatic stress was in World War II and World War I. And doctors used to think it was a cardiac problem, and they called it soldier's heart. They thought it was melancholy and emotional disease, but what they now know is that was actually post-traumatic stress. And I think a lot of the things the military has done to address this is actually gone in to the civilian society too, with firemen and policemen and trained engineers and now doctors who were experienced the kinds of trauma in life situations that you can hopefully try and prevent or at least mitigate after it happens.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because we had an interview with a gentleman who was in the Battle of Iwo Jima named Stanley Rubin. And at the end of the interview, he walked us through, and it was unbelievable. He walked us through what happened over the course of an hour while they were on Iwo Jima. And then at the end of it, I asked him, do you think that you had post-traumatic stress? And he said, no, I don't. And I said, are you sure? And he said, well, I haven't slept well since we left Iwo. And right. I constantly think about it at night, and it consumes a lot of my thoughts, but I don't think I have post-traumatic stress. And I'm thinking, this generation is going to be the first generation that's really fortunate to have the care and to be able to go to therapy, because a lot of those men and women who served in World War II, Vietnam, and on and on and on, they didn't have that
right
type of support system. And I hope that it continues to get better and better and better as we go on.
Well, let me just share a personal story if I can real quick, because I had it, and it was after Desert Storm. And what happened was I actually shot a guy at close range with a pistol, an Iraqi, after the war was over. We were clearing some trench lines near the Kuwait border, and there was a soldier in there, and we walked into this trench, this dugout, this tunnel, as everybody that's been in Iraq knows about. And this guy started pulling up his weapon, and I had a 45 pistol drawn, and I shot him. And when he died, or when he fell over, his helmet came off, and inside of his helmet was a picture of him and his kids and his wife. Well, I carried that with me for a long time. And about 3 or 4 years later, 1994, 95, you know, I found myself losing sleep, not really knowing what was causing it, snapping at my wife. And my wife finally said to me, you got to go talk to somebody. There's something wrong. And I had never told anybody about that story. And sure enough, you know, I started seeing a counselor and walked through that issue. And I think it gave me a better understanding of what that kind of trauma can do to young soldiers, you know, when they're in combat. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of us that have been through it now in different times that have a better feel for what it is and what it can do to you. So your friend that was in Iwo Jima certainly probably was having some hard night's sleep because of it.
And I think that what you said there is a perfect example of what a lot of us that who have been injured in combat zone experience as well. Like most of my traumatic experience, my post-traumatic experiences aren't what happened to me directly, but what I saw other people going through.
Right.
Whenever a bombing happened and there was an artillery strike that hit a little girl, like there was bricks that came off and it busted her skull open, and having to carry her a long distance, like that is a type of thing that sticks with me for a long time. So it's always interesting to hear people who are wounded. It's usually not their own personal stories, but what they saw happen to someone else.
Yeah, human beings aren't meant to deal with this emotionally. We had a colonel in 2007 and 8 in Iraq who was in a sheikh meeting. You know, he was in there with a bunch of sheikhs, and some guy came in, there were like 200 people in the room. He was on one side of the room, and on the other side of the room, a guy came in with a suicide vest and popped it off. And all he could remember, he told me later on, all he could remember was a pink cloud everywhere. And he was not hurt, but he said, you know, he told me later on, he was suffering from post-traumatic stress, and it was because of that event. Even though he was not hurt, he saw these other people dying when the suicide vest popped off, you know?
And I think, yeah, I mean, I completely agree. When I was looking at your story and seeing, I saw your name come across Twitter a lot, and I would see you on CNN, and I would see different articles and op-eds and things like that that you wrote, I always find it interesting whenever somebody is kind of a mold breaker, I would say, from the typical military ideology. Was it difficult for you, because you've been described as a liberal, and going through and having some of your political ideologies that doesn't fall in line with the typical general, was that something that was difficult for you to kind of, I guess, come out as more liberal minded?
First of all, I'd say I don't think I'm a liberal. I really have a strong belief in what our Constitution says. I've read it several times, as well as the Federalist Papers and what our nation was trying to do. And I have a strong, I took the seven Army values that we learned as soldiers, and I've applied four of those to my life. One of which is integrity. Another one's respect. Selfless service and personal courage are what I consider my four values. And when you apply those kind of things, you're willing and ready to call out people who don't tell the truth, who aren't working for the good of our country. Now, if that's what a liberal is, okay, color me a liberal, but I just kind of think I'm actually a little bit more conservative than many people would think. I just don't believe in taking a bunch of BS from people that don't really understand what our nation is attempting to do in terms of societal norms.
There you go. I think that's a great answer. General, we thank you for joining us today on ZBT. If we could ever do anything for you, let us know. Where can the people find you at on Twitter?
Well, it's at Mark Hertling on Twitter. It's pretty easy. I'll only block you if you're mean or nasty or use foul language, okay?
Yeah, and if I see you doing that to the general whenever we tag him in our social media posts, I'm going to block you too, just so you
okay.
know.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, thanks, Jeff. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, General.
I had a great talk with him. I like getting in and actually sitting down. It's not something I would have liked to do whenever I was actually in, but now that I'm out, getting their perspective on what they do and seeing the different viewpoints from multiple command levels, because we've talked about that before, that a lot of military people, when they get out, they act like they are experts in everything, whether it be foreign policy, whether it be local policy, and they're just flat out not. You can't have somebody who has a little bit of multi-theater involvement, multi-theater opinions and wisdom, but most of us aren't that way. So having somebody on who can see what the pandemic would cause in multiple theaters and how it could affect readiness for the military overall is an interesting perspective, and I thank Mark for bringing that to us.
Did you actually have an opportunity? I would imagine, just by the nature of what you did, you probably spoke to a lot of higher ranking individuals when you were still in, right?
Oh yeah, all the time. Yep.
Yeah.
In my first deployment, every time I went back to this, I think it was called Camp Hansen, but I'd be out at these little outposts, and then I would have to come back, and every evening, I remember Lieutenant Colonel Christmas was his name, and so it was like Lieutenant Colonel type ranks, the top guys who are with the infantry with 3-6 mm-hmm. and 2-9, they would all be in a tent giving the briefing for the day. Here's the logistics officer, here's this officer, and then I was a Lance Corporal, so I was the only non-officer in the room, like... And I was the only rank below a major in the room. And so they're all giving this high part stuff. And then I'd be like, well, we gave away 3 sewing machines to some women today. And I found some really neat fabric with little mirror pieces on it. And so the one time they had a joke where somebody had dared me. I think it was like it was definitely a rank above a major to flip off. They were like, do it. I promise you have our permission to flip them off when it's your turn for the round. We're all in on it. And I was like, are you sure? And so I did my little makeup thing. And I was like sweating, but I was like, okay.
I bet your face was so red.
Well, it was some big inside joke they all had. And so I guess I was just a little puppet on the strings. And I was like, okay, message to Garcia, I guess I will. Anyway, it was terrifying and whatever. So that was a neat experience.
But yeah, they would bring in dog handlers too, like for those briefs where they would come in. And it was the same every single time. So the battalion commander would bring me in and be like, all right, let's go over to the dog handler. What's your plan? And every time, I was a corporal at the time, I would only have one. I was like, I'll be up front. Like, that's where I'll be. Like you talk about positioning, like I'll be up front. Like that's where I'll be. Just walking like an asshole for a long time.
Other than that, I had like zero experience with officers when I was in. That was pretty much the only time.
All right, let's move on to round number 5 that comes to us courtesy from Stars and Stripes. I'll brief this one for us. No, I won't. Conjugate.
Wait.
What?
before we get into this round, guys, to kind of help us, round number four, a question for you guys real quick before we get into the submarine thing. When you were deployed and you were in spots where you couldn't get the news, what was the most common gossip from the States that would somehow get to you guys?
Oh, I mean, most of it probably came from like People or Us magazine.
Yeah.
I think it was like Jennifer Gardner and Ben Affleck had just got married.
Our thing was, the gossip was, somebody would come by in a logistics supply convoy and be like, Angelina Jolie died. And everybody would be like, holy shit, Angelina Jolie died. And we had no way to like...
And there's no way to test it.
It was always celebrity deaths. That was the big ripple that was always going through. Or some crazy, crazy sports news. Like some baseball team had scored 42. It was like, what? Anyways, so when you...
That being said, before you move on, I have a big retraction to make. Bob Dole, still very much alive.
Oh,
he
right.
is alive. We made that mistake a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Bob Dole is alive. All right, let's continue
Patriot.
On. Cons, what's going on with that being said, what's going on with these French submariners?
Well, you would think that everyone in the world just happens to know what's going on, and that's not actually the case. Submariners stealthily cruising the ocean deeps, purposely shielded from worldly worries to encourage undivided focus on their top secret missions of nuclear deterrence, may be among the last pockets of people anywhere who are still blissfully unaware of how the pandemic is turning life upside down. Quick question. Would you like to be like these submariners and just be blissfully unaware?
No, I think I would like to know because you... I think that not knowing, as we go on through the article, you'll see like what some of the command opinion is and why they do this. But I think I would be constantly worried about what is possibly going on. If you have that anxious nature, you're not going to be sure about what's happening at all. But keep going, Cons.
Yeah, so most of these crews that left port before the virus spread around the globe are likely being kept in the dark about the extent of the rapidly unfurling crisis by their commanders until their return. French submariners' missions last 60 to 70 days with about 110 crew members aboard. So a crew that left at the end of February wouldn't be expected back before the end of April. In that case, they will return to a world changed by the pandemic.
Holy shit.
I know, right?
Completely miss it.
Whoa.
On March 1st, France had just 130 confirmed COVID-19 cases and 2 deaths. In under a month, those numbers have surged past 2,600 dead and over 40,000 sickened.
And the next line is the understatement of the fucking millennium.
For submariners, the return to land could be a shock.
You think. So, I mean, they have these 70 to 80 people that are inside these submarines. And I actually talked to somebody this weekend who was a submariner. And they talk about how dark it is and how cold it is. And you don't know when it's daytime, when it's nighttime, except for by the 24-hour clock. You just know what the clock says. Other than that, you have no sunlight to guide your body and how you're living and things like that. Getting in, and I know it for a fucking fact, these chiefs and master chiefs that will be in the French military are in ours. Every time you come up, they fuck with you about something that happens. Sometimes Robin Williams dies and it's the real truth, and sometimes Bob Dole dies and it's not the real truth. But you always come up with some nasty ass rumor. So imagine sitting in this S2 brief before you get going back to the sea level where you're going to be able to have some of this news get to you, and they will be sitting you and they say there's a worldwide pandemic. America, China, Korea,
okay, Master Chief. Okay.
All of Europe is okay, shut down. Sure. You're like, too far. That's some House of Cards bullshit. That's too far. And then the next thing you know, they show you pictures of the Louvre in France that's completely empty. Then you go to Tiananmen Square and it's totally empty. The Red Square is empty. Go to the fucking Egyptian pyramids.
Pretty
nothing's there.
Square,
Times
Square.
All the squares.
All
every
squares.
Squares.
All
any squares. Squares. Madison Square Garden. It's
for
empty
sure.
as well. Everything. And then you're just like, holy shit, because you haven't talked to your family. You call your family and see how they are, because there's could be thousands at this time when they service in April. If the president's right in what he said, there could be 50,000 people die in America by April 10th. Like, that is insane numbers.
My argument for them telling them now would be that, hey, I know we're all stuck in this little thing, we can't go anywhere, but guess what? Whole world is right now. We're not alone. Everybody's trapped in a thing about our size. Yeah,
yeah, like they come up and people are like, we've been isolated. Like, fuck you. You've been isolated. We have been isolated.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. Right.
Well, I mean, but, I still don't think I would want to know, because the chief doctor, Gabriel, points out, he said all events that could affect or change the morale of the crew members are kept from them. since they don't have internet, radio, television, the only news you get comes from the commander. So if they knew this on top of living in these confined quarters, it would just make their lives so miserable, in my opinion.
Crazy.
Damn right. I mean, I just don't know what you, like, trying to wrap my head around what I would think if I was in that boat and I came up, I'd be like, what? I wrote a blog about it this morning on Barstool. They've got to have a camera crew that gets these folks' reactions, even though it is kind of morbid. I would love to see that. Like, because you know it's going to be like, get the fuck out. Les incompetents, sacrilege, this is ridiculous. Like,
John,
this is not what it's happening.
John Quinones in a scuba suit floats over to the window.
Yeah.
He's like, how do you guys feel about all this?
You trying to tell me Scuba Steve has a coronavirus. Like, that cannot happen.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Pretty good French by me. I mean, that was pretty good French. But that would be scary because the story goes on to say that this is a commonplace thing for them. That one guy said that in 2004 he came up and there was a large-scale assassination that happened in France and nobody knew about it and they didn't believe it whenever they first came up. So getting these calls, this information would be scary. And you have to think, how nerve-wracking would your last 3 days on a submarine be? Because you'd be coming back to the surface and you're about to find out. I mean, did they know about Kobe? Like what don't you know? When you come up for 3 months, you can't catch up with how fast news moves now. There's going to be gaps in your memory that are always there. I talk about that for me as a Jags fan. If you talk about the Jags from February of 2007 all the way to January of 2008, it's like that season didn't exist for me because I was overseas. I have no idea what happened. Any references to pop culture, movies, and things like that, you just don't catch up.
For whatever reason, if you're not following something in real time, even if you go back and study it and read up all about it, it still doesn't stick in your memory the same way.
Well, think about the Great Depression, like what we know of the Great Depression. Now, the Great Depression, this is about to get fucking deep. Oh my God, I'm about to get so deep. So the Great Depression for us is a blip on the radar screen of time. You know, like if you look at time as an actual timeline, it's just a dot. You're not looking at it for the course of years that it actually went on and what people had to go through and suffer through eating cabbage soup, wondering if they're going to get bread and things like that. It's a spot in a textbook that I look at and say, this is the Great Depression. Putting actual memories to the Great Depression is not something that we'll be able to do. These people are going to be 2 months removed from a timeline that they very well could have lived in and will have that blip, that point on a map where they knew what happened, but they will have nothing in between.
Yeah, no, it's wild to think about. But then you look at what we're going through right now for ourselves, and I'm sure we will remember this very differently than 50 years from now when our grandchildren are reading about it in a textbook, if they still use textbooks in 50 years, which they probably won't.
Yeah, because you look at Spanish flu, you're like, 5 million, big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to round number six. Was that round six? What round was that?
That was five.
Okay, five. Round six. Oh, Katie Acronyms is back at it again. Kate's got a new game for us. Explain the game, Kate. Hold up, Kate. Before we go to the acronym section, I want to give a little bit of advice here. People need to start using Honey. Right now, money is getting tight for a lot of folks. If you're not saving money every single way you can, you are wrong. Honey is the free online shopping tool that saves you money. For example, if you just go to honey.com/ZBT, you click there, you add in a little add-on to your Google Chrome or whatever internet browser that you use, and you just go back to like Amazon or you go to whatever shopping spot you work, Honey has a little H symbol that goes to the top of your browser and it'll light up whenever you go to buy something. Like you could say, for instance, whenever I just got some new headphones, I'm a big headphones guy, the normal price was like $119. With Honey, it went down to like $89 because there was a promo code that I could use that came directly from the brand of headphones that I got. So it takes off like $30 right there. Super easy. It's helped over 18 million members and $2 billion of saving. Not using Honey is literally passing up money. And you know me, I like more than just a smackerel of honey. Add Honey. Go to honey.com/ZBT. That's honey.com/ZBT to save money. They support over 30,000 stores online and are adding more every day. 100,000 five-star reviews. Can't be wrong. honey.com/ZBT.
So the military is all about acronyms. SMEAC, JJ Did Tie Buckle, SNAFU. What are some others off the top of your head?
Ooh,
SITREP. SITREP's FUBAR. My favorite.
Yep, FUBAR, SITREP.
MCMAP.
But I mean, pretty much everything is an acronym in the military. It's kind of like a cliche joke now. It's like, yeah, we get everything. But I wanted to find some in the civilian world that are super common and see if you know what the acronym stands for. These are things that you heard, like everyday things that I think when I was going through it, I was like, holy shit, I had no idea. So number one, WD-40. First of all, what is that? Oh. That's the spray that
like loosens up if you have a nut or something like that that's like squeaky or it needs to come off earlier. Or if your dad drives a 1978 Ford Ranchero while he's playing softball at the base softball games, it's something that whenever you're 7 years old, you pick up and spray yourself in the eyes and feel like you're going to be blind.
Yep,
or you take a lighter, get the flame going, and then spray the WD-40 so you have like a mini blowtorch.
Yeah, but kill a spider.
Do you guys have any idea what it means, WD-40?
Water displacement 40th attempt, I think.
Are you cheating?
No.
How the hell do you know that?
I'm weird. I know acronyms. Seriously. I don't mean to sound like a weirdo, but I'm always curious about acronyms.
Okay, now I wish you wouldn't have put these in the sheet. I didn't look them up. I'm not calling cons an integrity violator, but if the listeners want to, I would understand it.
Yeah.
No, I look up acronyms all the time. I swear to God. This is something I do.
It means WD is water displacement 40th attempt. So it must have been the 40th try that the scientist
That sticks a lot better than WD-39. WD-39 is a terrible name.
Boy, don't you wish it was WD-69?
Oh, yeah.
WD-420. Make things a little moist on this screw.
Water displacement, that's what I call my penis.
Yeah. Up next, CVS. Going down to CVS to pick up my prescription. What does CVS stand for?
Oh.
Consumer Value Stores.
Nope.
Oh, what is it?
Customer Value Stores, you idiot cons. What a moron. Here's another one. M&M's. Or, as the MREs would say, pan-coated chocolate discs. But M&M's.
That's the guys who started it. Mars and I think Murray or Mary?
You looked this shit up. I hate you
no,
so much.
No, I swear to God, I did not. Mm-mm. I swear to God, I did not. These are not like a really obscure acronyms. I've looked these up
M&M's
over the course of my
obscure.
Lifetime.
First time I've heard of it.
Yeah, Mars and Murray's, the candy's founders. Okay, how about Pam Cooking Spray, cons? You know that one?
No, I don't know that one.
Chaps?
I mean, there's no shot. If I don't know M&M and CVS, Pam Cooking, I assumed it was some lady Pam. I didn't even, is it some type of olive oil? Palm oil, aloe, and mustard seed.
Nope, it's product of Arthur Mayerhoff.
Arthur Mayerhoff.
But I feel like it's become this thing, like anything you spray on a cooking sheet, you're like, it's Pam. And nobody knows what it means.
Well, kind of like, what is it? Scotch tape.
Mm. Taser.
Yeah, that's the actual guy's name.
Yes. Thomas A. Swift's electric rifle. That's what that stands for. I had no idea. Zip in zip code.
Zone improvement plan.
Yes, that's
Whoa,
correct.
I didn't know that.
They created them a long time ago to help with the mail.
Oh, okay.
This one, I did not know this. Did you know that U.S. Patriot Act is an acronym?
Yeah.
No.
It's actually the USA Patriot Act.
It is. That's
uniting
great.
And strengthening America by providing.
You fucking cheater.
No,
hate
I'm
you.
Not.
You're
I'm,
so
I'm,
full of shit.
No, I'm not.
He just looked off to the side. We got to post the video. He looked off to the side.
He looked off to the side.
With my eyes closed. I'm trying to picture the word so I could sound out the acronym. Patriot is protecting America.
Is that where your teleprompter is,
no.
Cons? Beyond the computer?
No.
He's
no,
touching his ear. He's got somebody in his ear.
Yep.
Something about intercepting and obstructing terrorism. What is it?
Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism.
Holy I hate
shit.
These fucking
so
idiots.
Unnecessary.
The Congress is so goddamn stupid. Like they made the U.S. Patriot Act and then they try to fit it. It's like what people used to do on Twitter with Benghazi, where they would make it say Benghazi. That's the same thing they did with this.
For sure. I just have a couple more that I thought. I always thought Time Magazine was just Time Magazine, but the Time stands for something.
Whoa.
Cons.
I don't want to say anything
because yeah, don't say.
Go ahead. No, no, you went to all the effort to look it up, so why don't you say?
I didn't look them up.
Yeah, we don't want your Google to go to waste. No, bandwidth is important.
That's a lie. I've looked these up over the course of my life. I didn't just happen to know all of these things.
I had no idea you're such an acronym connoisseur.
Yeah, I didn't realize. Oh, good man. Oh,
look at me searching Google. I have a queen.
I have a curious brain. I'm sorry.
I'm very curious and well read.
Yes. The International Magazine of Events.
Yes, that's correct. Laser. Do laser cons.
Laser. So laser. Laser's like lighting. Fuck.
Oh, fuck. Con dropped the fuck bomb.
Yeah. Oh, you can kick rocks.
Unbecoming. Unbecoming.
Kick rocks.
Something emitting radiation.
Light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. And final one for all the cool kids, all the cool teens out there, GIF.
Oh, something. Yep, don't know.
Graphics something or other font or
film?
Graphics interchange format. Those. I didn't know. Literally, I was. When I read that CVS was an acronym, I was like, holy shit.
All right, I know Cons knows this one. Let's see if Kate knows it off the top of her dome. Scuba.
Oh. Isn't that for, like, when somebody's passed out and you want to make sure they don't send help?
Or no. It's when people are scuba diving.
Yeah, scuba diving. What does scuba diving mean? We need to have a GIF of or a thing of Kate's face where it's the window shutdown music whenever I ask her that question.
Okay.
Doom doom.
Seafaring.
Seafaring.
Sea.
Yep.
Holy shit! I don't know what is it.
Self-contained
underwater breathing apparatus.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a little scuba diving goofing. All right, let's move into safe rounds, alibis. We'll start with you, Cons. What do you got?
All right, number one, did you guys see that fight that Terminal Lance posted of the unit in the army?
Yes. I kind of want to talk about it.
What are your thoughts?
I kind of want to talk about it on Friday because I want to put a question out there on social media about every unit has had a fist fight at some point. I feel like tensions are high, especially on deployment. In ours, it was a staff sergeant swinging at a master gunnery sergeant.
Oh, love it.
Wild turn of events. Well, so I want to ask people.
Yeah, I told you recently that time when I think it was a specialist knocked our first sergeant out with a mag light.
Yeah.
So things like that do happen, but you got to go watch this fight if you haven't, because this was like 50 people involved.
I
don't think I've seen anything like that. We'll talk about it on Friday. We'll get into a little bit of fight goofing. What else you got?
One other thing. I don't even know if I should be sharing this, but I've already started saying
Spill
things.
Spill the tea, honey.
Kate, this mostly affects you.
Oh.
So I have a buddy who works in the governor's office of New Jersey.
And he's single.
There is talk right now that depending on how long this thing goes, they're going to do checkpoints, and the only people allowed at the Jersey Shore this summer will be if you have a Jersey license.
Oh.
Well, we already rented our beach cottage.
I think that's going to get canceled anyway, honestly. We're ending the show on a sad note. What are we doing here, Con?
Jeez.
Well, I'm just trying to keep everyone abreast.
You know what? I live right by the East River, and it's got a little beach in my neighborhood, and when the cans and the needles and the glass isn't on it, it's beautiful. So I don't need anybody else. I don't need another beach, whatever.
Yeah, and she said that without any sadness in her eyes at all. Kate, what do you got for your save round?
Well, speaking of New Jersey, can I just tell a quick anecdote of a story I saw over the weekend?
We got nothing but time.
There's this teeny, teeny little island off the coast of Maine called, like, Vilinhulin or something Viking sounding. And in September, a group of construction workers, like five or six construction workers from New Jersey, got shipped up to that island to do a construction job. So they're living in a little rented house up there. They're all watching TV this weekend, and all of a sudden the cable cuts out. That's the sound of a cable. That's the cable cuts out. They're probably watching The Masked Singer. They think it's Dustin Diamond from Saved by the Bell under that mask. They're really excited. They're just about to say it. Cable cuts off. Whoa. So one of them says, let me go outside and check the cable box or whatever. I don't know what that means, but he goes outside and the trees around the driveway are chopped down, blocking them in. that somebody has chopped down their trees to create a barricade so they can't take their cars anywhere. There's a rustling. The local island townies come out of the bushes with guns. And they're like, you ain't going nowhere. Because that's how they talk in Maine. Howdy, you ain't going nowhere. Anyways, the town started getting paranoid that these New Jersey dirtbags brought the coronavirus with them back in September. And barricaded them in. The town decided to barricade these guys in and not let them leave their house. These guys didn't have cell phones that had service on this island. They had to tweak some sort of radio to call for help so that they could. It's insane. That's crazy.
Anyway. I thought this was going to some cheesy joke, but it turns out it's just a wild story.
It's a real ass story. Anyways, I'm just saying, if I was that construction workers, I would have McMapped my way out of it.
What would your move of choice been?
Well, the classic knife hand from the movie. As soon as I watched the movie Taken, he knife hands so many people to death, just chop to the neck.
Yeah, the jugular chop.
Yep.
So have you ever been jugular chop, Cons?
No, can't say that I have.
It works. Like if you do a little slight jugular chop and you do it right, it sends a rush of blood to your head and you'll pass out temporarily.
In the smoke pit, we used to love trying to do it to each other.
I used to do it to my Marines all the fucking time. I would buckle them in the hallway. It was great. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Anyways, yeah. I don't know. I just thought that was crazy. I don't even know why I started telling that story. But, New Jersey. But here's my little joke.
What the fuck are we doing here?
Probably wasn't the virus. They probably just didn't want these Jersey dirtbags roaming around their island.
Boom roasted. All right. My save round is I want to give everybody a little encouragement. Reach out to your buddies. They're stuck at home. A lot of people are stuck at home. Utilize FaceTime. My wife made a great point yesterday morning when we were sitting around. She was like, you know, over the last couple years, really the last 10 years, we've developed, especially in our generation, people that are 40 and below, this concept that just calling people out of the blue or FaceTiming them out of the blue is something that's rude. I think that we need to get back to that right now. Sometimes, like, we always reach out with a text, like, hey, what's going on? But you only see the words across your screen. Reach out to people, speak to them face to face. Set up a wine night, set up a booze night where you can hang out, play a little bit of games, play like Cards Against Humanity or KFC Radio's game, answer the internet. You could do all those different types of things. Enjoy each other's company. Me and my wife called Kate last night. We're going to call Con soon. I called Keith and I called Feidelberg and just had some time, just spending time with your friends, not in a content sense, not in like any of that stuff, just being friends, being human people. I think that's something that we need to get back to.
And I would say if you call any of your military buddies or you do a Zoom thing with them or you guys use the House Party app, send us a screenshot and we'll retweet it on
Zoom. Yeah, we'd love that. Let's have it hashtag barracks party where you have like online barracks party where everybody's getting together and having a little bit of time because we are going to be in a spot, especially if this lasts for another couple of weeks, where we're going to go stir crazy. Like whether you're at home with your cat or you're with your girlfriend or like me with my kids here, there's going to be elements of that that is difficult for everybody, like people getting on your nerves or wishing somebody was there to get on your nerves. All those things are going to affect us in different ways. Let's be strong together. Alone together isn't just a little catchphrase. And I highly recommend if you're just sitting at home and you miss going out, throw on, get close to your TV, get close to your computer, throw on a concert. Listen to the concert, have a little bit of a drink. There was one that came out with John Mayer, did one. Dave Matthews did one. I would watch one with Garth Brooks last night. Do whatever you need to do. There is no shame in feeling lonely. There is no shame in feeling anxiety or depression. If you're doing that, again, I want to remind you to go to our comments, our bios on iTunes or on Spotify. Get the help you need. Reach out to us. We're talking to you. We're not doing shit anyway. So if you're really struggling and you want to talk to somebody, reach out to us. We'll be that for you as well. Until next time.